Toots Hibbert and the Maytals and pressure drop. In fact, I've already gotten a couple of emails from people that are enjoying it. And I got a couple of links. I'll send out a link to this album. Our friend Tom Herman, reggae. This is reggae, the golden era, 60 to 75, four CD set. Nice. All right, thank you, Tom. I'll send out a link to that and to The Harder They Come. Well, you want to talk about pressure on the firefighters and the communities from Canada, down to Southern California. And there probably isn't anybody that has friends or have contact with anybody in the Santa Anita racing community that hasn't now been affected. Obviously, the air quality and the ash is suspended training, and now Monrovia and the foothills are being engulfed. And I know there was some evacuation orders very close by. Steve Anderson is joining us from the Daily Racing Forum with the latest. Steve, good morning.
And good morning to you. It's been a hectic week here in Southern California. Since the Labor Day holiday ended with fires up and down the state, of course, but also here in the area, neighborhood just above Santa Anita, the sections that we spend so much time looking at and admiring on a typical day at the races have been badly affected by the fires that have taken place, including just directly above the racetrack in Arcadia, where more than 300 homes were ordered evacuated on Sunday morning. And some of the trainers and some of the people that we know in the racing community were among those who were told to leave their homes. And fortunately, the fire did not come down to that area, but it was getting in that direction near enough for the authorities to make the declaration. So it's been quite a tough week in that regard, and the air quality in the area has been very poor. And hopefully it'll change over the next 5 days.
Well, even as far north, I saw where your colleague Randy Goulding's Vancouver, even Hastings, they suspended training yesterday as the smoke and ash affecting air quality. I mean, Golden Gate as well, Steve. I mean, what do we need to know as to where things stand and what the anticipation is, and how training has been halted for how many days now?
There was minimal training on Thursday and Friday. A lot of trainers just decided to pass. They didn't often to send the horses out. Visibility on Friday morning was particularly poor, and that did not improve over the weekend as well. So in that sense, a lot of people just took steps within their own making. There have not been recorded workouts at Santa Anita. There probably will be maybe towards the end of the week, which is good, because racing at Santa Anita's autumn meeting begins on Saturday. They didn't
right.
run this weekend, and they wouldn't have run anyway, probably. I mean, in all likelihood, it would have been... They would have been canceled. It just wouldn't have been in the best interest. Now, 35 miles away, they have been able to run at Los Al because that's on a coastal plain in Orange County, quite a ways away. So in that regard, the difference, the distance did make a difference. So in that sense, that's positive. So we'll have to wait and see kind of what occurs over the next few days weather-wise. There's supposed to be some changes in the wind, and that could help visibility. The one problem with this fire that's affecting the area near Santa Anita, which is nicknamed the Bobcat Fire in California parlance, is that the ridge over Santa Anita and going out into that countryside where the mountains are, some of those canyons haven't burned since the late 50s, early 60s. So you can imagine the undergrowth and the amount of chaparral and just, conditions that would be conducive to a fire in dry weather. We haven't had any rain to speak of since the middle of May, which is typical for this time of year. You won't probably see any for another 30 days at best. So in that regard, Mother Nature is not going to come to the rescue. So the firefighters are up against very difficult circumstances. Because of the amount of smoke involved, there's been a limited amount of water drops. And those tanker planes that have fire retardant, you haven't seen as much of that in some cases, simply because the visibility's been so poor they don't know where to drop. You can't see down to the smoke, through the smoke. A lot of things are going to have to change in that favor to dissipate the blaze. But some of these fires in California, listening to some of what the Cal Fire officials are saying, this is up and down the state, not just in Southern California, particularly in the north, and that affects Golden Gate. They think they're going to be fighting these fires for another month.
Another month?
Yeah. I mean, there's 5 billion acres that have caught fire. That's, you know, an area the size of Connecticut, apparently. And it's just, you know, we had a fairly wet year this past year in up and down the state, particularly in the north. And in that regards, you know, there's a lot of undergrowth. There's 150 million trees that have been affected by a beetle infestation from the drought in the early 2010s that are just basically just standing matchsticks. So in that regard, those trees, you know, they're dead, and they're just still standing, and not anymore. So in that sense, there's just a lot of opportunity for bad fires to occur when they hit certain areas, and that's what's taking place right now up and down the state. And in doing so, you know, really affected this just day-to-day life. You know, you go outdoors and you look up or look out, so to speak, and it's pretty gray, and not fog gray either. But what's remarkable is if it does burn off a little bit, the morning fog is the refracted sun. You know, you can. It's almost like we're having like a minor eclipse down here in Southern Cal. Again, this is just a fragment of what they're facing in the north of the Bay Area and other communities up there in terms of visibility and air quality issues.
What year was it? The 94 Breeders' Cup? When the hills were
93 Altadena, just to the northwest of Santa Anita, had a terrible fire that year, and it was a remarkable bad October in Southern Cal. There was fires in Malibu, fires in Laguna, terrifying fires in Laguna, and also in Altadena. In fact, you stand on the Seal Beach Pier at night, see fires in three directions. The only reason you couldn't see one behind you was because it was the ocean. thanks for Catalina wasn't to blaze. But, and then in 03, there was another fire in the area when the Breeders' Cup came around again, and then in late October. In fact, I remember going down to the second press box to visit my colleague Dave Grenick, and he had ash falling on his keyboard. And that's just the way of September and October. And of course, 2 years ago, the terrible fire that hit Paradise, California, in the north in November. This is the time of year where this happens. And, you know, no matter what precautions are taken, it's natural. And so in that sense, it's pretty severe. There was a fire on New Year's Eve a few years ago in the mountains above Santa Anita, above Duarte, to the east of the track. And even now, well, 5, 6, 7 years later, you drive up the 605 freeway towards the racetrack, and you can still see the area that was affected by that fire because the growth is different. And that'll be the case soon here now, too, when this clears out. You'll look up on that mountainside above Santa Anita, and there's going to be a change in foliage because there's nothing left anymore. And, you know, 5 years, 6 years from now, it'll grow back, and there'll be changes in that regard. But for a while, it'll look awkward. It'll look different. So hopefully, you know, fortunately, the fire hasn't come down the mountain into the communities that you mentioned a moment ago, because so many of those places, because of their proximity to the racetrack, are home to a lot of people in the Southern California racing community. You know, you can be back up there in 10 or 15 minutes. So that's another issue that's widespread, not just in the Arcadia Sierra Madre area. And Santa Anita is actually a evacuation center right now through the Red Cross because of its space. And I don't know how many people are taking advantage of that, but they have the track has worked with the Red Cross for accommodation for people who are facing difficulties right now.
Wow. Speaking of which, so it is nice to hear that things seem to be at least, you know, girded away from the tracts of population, because I think we went to bed last night and things did not seem as, you know, it seemed like there was real threat to, you know, some population centers. I saw, you know, somebody sent a copy of the evacuation text that you know, it would it's like around here when I suppose out there, Steve, you guys are more used to these various alarm bells, whether it's earthquake related or in this case fire. Here, things like hurricanes coming, you get a lot of advance warning. It's a different scenario.
You have to go up that hillside pretty far to get into the evacuation order area. There was evacuation warning area for a wider swath of those neighborhoods. But you've got to drive almost to the top of the developments in Arcadia to get to the section where the trailheads, really, to get to the section where folks were told to get out. What's disquieting, amongst other things, is that the number of people who can look up on those ridges above their homes see the fire, even though it's still several miles away. It's those tree stands are 30 and 50 feet tall. They're going up, and that's what's difficult is that. But fortunately, they have not come. The fires have not, for the large part, come down the mountain. They've stayed up the mountain or up in the next canyon over.
So, unbelievable.
This is just something that's going to continue. Yesterday morning, I think it was at 7:30, was when the Arcadia police came through the neighborhood, driving slowly over the loudspeakers and says, "Folks, let's go."
Wow.
They were under a warning anyway. That warning, as time allows, a warning precedes the order. And so folks who live in that neighborhood would have been, in all likelihood, prepared, put the right things in the car and, all the papers that you need and just a certain... keepsakes and things, and perhaps even made alternative arrangements to go somewhere for a couple of nights just to get out of the house in case that they needed to or were told to. So that's kind of where it stands right now.
Well, while we're on the topic, and whenever I get a chance to talk to you, there's always a handful of other things, and that includes progress on the new interior design, essentially the chute that's being built. What's the status at Santa Anita on this turf course chute?
It's going to be different. Construction started last month on a 6-foot-long chute that'll start basically in the clubhouse turn parking lot, and we'll join the main track briefly and then join the turf course, and it'll allow for 6-foot-long turf races on the flat and not down the hill. So the crossing will be in the opening furlong instead of in the final quarter mile, compared to what it was like on the hillside turf course, be about 6.5-furlong races. At best, the course will be ready in time for the winter-spring meeting in December, at the end of December. So there's still quite a bit of time before that will be incorporated into the program. What it provides the racetrack is a variety of turf sprint distances on the flat course, 5, 5.5, 6-furlongs. And that will expand a little bit of some of the program for turf racing, which is becoming increasingly in the last several years a larger portion of the overall program. In fact, there's some categories of claiming races here in California. Say, for example, the 16 to 25, 32 claimers. There just aren't that many of them, in terms of two-turn horses particularly, and one-turn horses to a lesser extent. You either seem to have a cheap horse or a very good horse out here right now. And that's an issue. So if this differences, this expanded program in turf sprints may help the overall program too, because it'll allow for a little bit more options at a time in which the track is not continuing to not run down the hill now for 18 months. So in that regard, they have not said whether that will be considered part of the program for 2021, although there's some discussions about doing it on a limited basis. But right now, that's not the case. So in that sense, the turf sprints have been all on the flat course, and that's going to change here with an extended program.
Steve Anderson with us from DRF. And Steve, my follow-up was going to be exactly that, what the status was of the potential return to the downhill. So that gets us an answer. One thing that I haven't had a chance to reach out to him yet myself, but you reported on Jack Carava ending his training career. And, Jack is in his 50s, and it feels like he's been training for 30 years, and well, it turns out he has.
Yes.
It's pretty funny that, you know, he started, he's one of these guys who started as a very young man and had amassed a considerable amount of winners, but the chance to take Tyler Bayes' book, kind of irresistible. And I do have to wonder out loud if Kieran McLaughlin is, you know, kind of sent up the flare on this topic for some people.
Yeah, I think it has. You know, Jack had Pure as Gold was a grade one winner, or great was one of his top sprinters in the 2000s. He's had five graded stakes wins. He had a very much of a rank and file stable overall. You know, a lot of variety of horses in terms of, you know, different class levels, and he had more than 1,000 wins. And he had some good seasons, particularly 10 years ago, and about that period of time. The last couple of years, he hadn't had as many winners. So in the sense that, you know, the success wasn't at the same rate. So when he had an opportunity, I think, when Tyler decided to come back to California, having been gone since January to ride in the Midwest primarily, I think Jack looked for it as an opportunity. And there was no racing scheduled, as you know, this weekend in Santa Anita. And he said, anyway, and he said that towards the end of Del Mar, he thought this was a good time. And he had about 15 head of horses that were in training, and they've gone. So some have gone to Spar, some of Bill Spar, some have gone to Mark Glad, others went to the north, and some went to the bench for a little bit of a rest. So they've kind of gone in several directions. So that's taken place. What's a little bit worrisome, though, is that this is the third sizable trainer in Southern California to stop training here or relocate this year. Anna Mia went to Kentucky in March, and Matt Chu retired last week. So this is a bit of a disquieting trend in the sense that right now the horse population in Southern Cal is down a little bit from, say, 5 years ago, and a little bit less than last year at this time. So there needs to be a little bit of an uptick to make, I think, people a little more comfortable with the racing program on a 3 or 4 day basis, primarily 3 days right now. And that would be a boost for the circuit to get some more runners and to maybe get a new barn or two to come out here. Although it's tough, it's economically difficult to operate in the state. It's one of the first things people talk about, and it's an expensive place to race, expensive place to live. And you know, the prize money is good, but unfortunately, without a casino support, that changes the equation for so many race courses around the United States. That's a different circumstance than what other people can face in other venues.
Well, the biggest concern I have is that Jack is still going to come out, you know, at about 4:45, because otherwise Glatt is going to be there all alone.
He's going to wind up being the first trainer and the first jockey agent in the building, because it's a natural habit to just get up in the middle of the night and go on with it. So, yeah, it'll be fun to see him do well. They won 146 races together. I looked it up a few days ago.
Wow.
Jack Carava and Tyler Bayes, if I remember correctly. So they have a long relationship of you know, success together, and Tyler's had a pretty good run. You know, this year in the Midwest, he did well at Oaklawn back in the spring and late winter, and went on to Kentucky through Ellis Park, and he's coming back out here now. I think he's back out here. And looking forward to resuming on Saturday. So there'll be a change there. You know, Jockey Colony's not quite the same as it was when he left back in wintertime. You know, Juan Hernandez and Ricardo Gonzalez from Northern California had very good Del Mar meetings. They're staying in Southern California. Roberto Rispoli, 8 months after his arrival from Hong Kong, is well established. You know, he almost won the title, as you know, the riding title at Del Mar.
Yeah.
Took Flavian Pratt to the final day before that competition was decided. So they've really kind of risen to become the two leading riders. It's very comparable to what we saw 10 years ago in Southern California between Joel Rosario and Rafael Bejarano. And it looks to me as if those two guys will be the dominant riders, but there's a good group behind them and a good solid group. Listen, it's not McCarran, Pinkai, Delahousse at all from the, you know, the 1980s and 1990s, but nonetheless, still a pretty good little group of jockeys that are competing right out here right now. The names have just changed a little bit over the last year or two.
Well, and you mentioned you know, Bayes and wrapping up the riding in the Midwest, and he won for Michael Ann Ewing. In fact, I've been trying to get her on to talk about her nice win with Barrister Tom, the Artie Schiller 2-year-old, and so Bayes with a you know, a couple of wins at Kentucky Downs with two more days of riding. We had Rispoli and Pratt, courtesy of Derek Lawson the other day, Steve, which was a lot of fun. Derek drove them to the airport to fly to Nashville, you know, to get to Kentucky Downs. And so we had them in the car together. And I said I hoped that Umberto was in the front seat so that he arrived first and could, you know, level the ledger.
Yeah, that it's really remarkable to watch his success. I happen to follow Hong Kong racing over the last couple of years and watched him ride over there, and he's really kind of lifted the game a little bit, particularly on the grass, but he's also done quite well on the main track, too. He's not just a grass jockey. They do have a dirt track at Sha Tin Racecourse in Hong Kong, so the main track was not... Main track was nothing new to him per se. It's just a little bit different from the racing in the United States compared to racing overseas. So it's interesting to see what he can do now. It'll be fun to follow over the next couple of months to see what mounts he picks up for the Breeders' Cup and see if riding day to day winners is what is an accomplishment. But let's see if some of these big mounts can come through over the next month or so as the Breeders' Cup gets closer and lines out. So that'll be fascinating to see if he has an impact on a national basis this autumn.
Well, and since you mentioned some of your other interests, because nobody follows, more far-flung portions of racing than you do, Steve. Of course, Marcus Hirsch does a lot of international as well for the paper. But whenever there's quarter horse questions, I turn to you. And we did have a nice visit leading toward the big finish at Rio Doso, going back a few weeks ago, and that was in advance of their handicapping contest, first time that they had gotten involved. And one thing I didn't get a chance to follow up on was the All-American and that filly, Whistle Stop Cafe. That was quite a performance.
It really was. And speaking to Ricky Ramirez, the jockey in advance of the race, he was very optimistic about her ability to recover from a trial race in which she bled. And there was a 14-day gap between the trial and the final, and she did fine in the interim, as we saw in the final. And if there was any hesitation about her condition going in, it was answered over those 440 yards. So Whistle Stop Cafe, champion two-year-old, probably overall. And quarter horse racing does it slightly differently. Champion Colt, Gelding, Philly, and then an overall title. So there's actually a little bit more of an expanded deal. She's expected to go to Lone Star with the Blainwood stable this fall. They have one major fraternity in November there. They have two, Desperate Cash Fraternity at the start of the meet, but the Texas Classic Fraternity in November is their primary fraternity, and she'll go down there, and that's really going to be her next outing. And it was a very good finish to a Rio Doso meeting that also was affected badly. Their casino has not been open since March. They were at 50% capacity in their turf club and the Rio Doso Jockey Club, so they had some people there towards the second half of the meeting, and that was encouraging to see people active at the track there. And the final weekend of racing, particularly the quarter horse stakes, were very good, and I thought Dexter in the Gold Cup was very impressive, and he will come out here to California now in light of the Champion of Champions in December with a leading chance in that race, having won the Remington Park Championship. So he did quite well. Monte Rosa also won the All-American Derby the same afternoon, and his barn is in peak form. He's never had a better year than he's having right now. And speaking of Lone Star, Ratification, that won the first ever All-American Oaks, is supposed to run down there in the Texas Classic Derby later this year. Quarter horse racing developed this year a very promising program. Los Alamitos put some money into a three-year-old fillies race in the spring called Los Alamitos Oaks. And Rio Doso developed two races, the Rainbow Oaks in July and the All-American Oaks that was run on Labor Day weekend. And it gave people with three-year-old fillies an opportunity to get away from those tough males if they chose to, and run in trials and finals for those two races to give fillies more of an opportunity. I think that's a boost. I think quarter horse racing has always been all-encompassing. Fillies ran against colts or males in the major races for all age groups, and now you're seeing a little bit more of an opportunity just for fillies. And if that means that more three-year-old fillies stay in training, then that's a boost, and that's a big plus for the sport overall. And we've seen, you know, there are some nice older horse, older filly and mare races nationwide at Losail and Remington, but it's time for tracks like Lone Star to boost some prize money in that division for the horses that race on that circuit. And hopefully the development of the Ruidoso Oaks program will also lead to another race that can grow for their division, because they do have a 40 grander right now, but they really need to have a 75 or 100, and I know they know that. And that would be a boost, too, for the overall program. Just keep some of these older fillies and mares in training and get some name recognition for some of these runners, because Ratification that won the All-American Oaks and the Rainbow Oaks is exquisite. I mean, she's just a very, very good filly.
Well, and this filly that won the All-American, and you mentioned Ramirez, I thought he was instrumental. I retweeted, I think TVG had put up, you know, the video, and it was his first All-American win in his 10th try. He's been eager, as any quarter horse rider would be, to get an All-American added to the resume. But I thought it was instrumental. You know, the sea kind of parted for her. She was kind of alone in the middle of you know, the pack, and he sort of started to steer her a little bit toward that late runner that was, and I forget who it was, that was starting to threaten. And I think eyeballing her, you know, letting her see what was there, you know, that there was something coming, really was instrumental in her persevering to the wire.
Yep. There is a little bit more to it than just zooming down the racetrack. He's been chasing the All-American since his early 20s in the late 2000s, and he joked with me 2 weeks ago now, right before the race. He goes, "I've been trying to win this race for 100 years." So it was his day. And he's been champion jockey before. He's very good. And he had a really strong finish to the Ruidoso meet with the support of Blaine Wood. And that barn did quite well that this summer up there, as they typically are expected to do. And with the number of strong, deep-pocketed clients they have, and it's been a successful year for that stable. And I look for it to continue for them at Lone Star as well. They train in Weatherford, Texas, well to the west of the Dallas-Fort Worth, and can be in the racetrack in a little less than an hour from the training center. And so they've got an opportunity to interchange horses from the racetrack stable to the training center stable, and that's going to be a tough meet. But Texas Quarter Horse Texas Horse Racing prize money is up this year, thanks to some 2019 legislation, and hopefully that will allow for some growth in the sport in that area, because they have had a disrupted year this year, as everyone has, and we haven't seen the true depth of that increase, because of the changes that have been forced upon racing, necessarily. But hopefully this fall and then into 2021, that circuit will have a further chance for it to grow and develop a little bit more of a following nationwide in every capacity, whether you're at a bricks-and-mortar simulcast location or watching from home.
Well, and I won't let a quarter horse conversation go without another reminder, as we did last week, in light of the thoroughbred jocks banding together and supporting Vinny Bednar after the spill that leaves him paralyzed. Any updates? I'll direct people again, for those that weren't aware, to the GoFundMe that's already raised $85,000 or so in about 10 days. Any further news on Vinny?
Still hoping to see that him get to the Craig Rehabilitation Center outside of Denver with one of the nation's premier facilities of its kind of less than 100 patients. And he's going to be based there going through some rehabilitation, and hopefully things you know, can improve for him in any way, manner, or form. Certainly, you know, the racing community has really risen to support him. You know, a lot of people think, well, he was a quarter horse jock at Losail, which is true. But, you know, he rode occasionally at Santa Anita and Del Mar. And 10 years ago, he rode at Turf Paradise for a winner in the thoroughbred circuit. And he initially started out as a thoroughbred jockey. That's one of the reasons why a lot of the familiar names in thoroughbred jockeys room know him, is particularly here in Southern California, is because he was riding here for a while and on that circuit. And he was quite young at the time, and migrated over to Losail, and really in the last year and a half and 2 years had worked closely with trainer Scott Willoughby on some outstanding run of form for track owner Red Stable. They won the Championship Champions back in December, and had a very, very good summer pardon me, July and August before he was injured. And so it's been a difficult time for the community in total. And they've given him support, and I think that will continue. And I'm glad to see that people nationwide have recognized Vinny Bednar, because he was really appreciative of what he was accomplishing. He been sidelined with a back injury in 2018, and since he'd come back, he'd done quite well. So he knew he was very fortunate in the results that he was getting, and to have this happen is just breathtakingly sad.
Yeah, we'll keep turning a spotlight, and I want people to be, you know, it's so easy to, you know, kind of forget about once it in the initial immediate aftermath, but want to keep his name and situation, keep everybody apprised as he works toward rehabilitation as best he can. Steve, this was very helpful and caught us up on a bunch of topics. The season starting this weekend at Santa Anita and working toward, you know, big assignments, obviously, and then back to Del Mar in November. I saw where you reported on the purse levels and the expectations for Del Mar in November. But we'll check in with you as the important Santa Anita fall meet gets going.
Yeah, hopefully we can get this past these difficult weather circumstances and get into be able to resume watching racing at Santa Anita as these important autumn races grow closer, because they've got a really nice program of races over the, particularly the first half of this season, this coming weekend, and particularly in the last weekend of September, 1st of October. So a lot to look forward to at Santa Anita as the community kind of continues into the autumn.
Always look forward to Steve Anderson joining us from the Daily Racing Form, and Steve's coverage just outstanding in all areas. DRF Anderson with an E, not Anderson with an O. Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Anderson, everybody, reporting on the fire situation and everything that has come with it, but feels like the things improved quite a bit since, yesterday afternoon and evening. So I appreciate Steve catching us up on everything. We're going to swing around and go back to Toronto and the other big upset from Saturday at Woodbine on plate day. And this one was tricky, tough to look at those PPs and come up with ride for the cause. But Gail Cox is joining us now. Gail, congratulations on the Canadian win.
Thank you.
Tell me what went on here, because it was going to obviously have to, run the race of his career to win this, and pretty much went out and did it.
Yes, so I've always liked this filly. She's run very well here. She's won on both our turf courses. She actually ran a really good race in a 3-year-old stake at Gulfstream. She was not beat very far, although she wound up sixth. She was running on end. She's a filly that needs to have a distance of ground and hasn't had the opportunity here too often. We just haven't ridden those races on the grass. So after winning her two other than here, you have a choice of stakes or preps for stakes. She's been training really, really well. She's, not the biggest filly, but extremely brave, and she has a big, huge stride. So I thought it was a logical step for her. She can run right out of her own stall. We didn't have to ship anywhere. It was definitely what I wanted to do.
Mm. It's tremendous. And, at first, when I went back and looked to see, she had a stakes try at Gulfstream back in December in the Tropical Park Oaks. And she actually ran okay. It was kind of moving late with Johnny and got beat two lengths for everything. But then it seems like backed up a little bit and kept the company, on a level basis. You can see, Gail, that she is and was making incremental improvement very slow and steadily.
Yes, she was. I think, you know what, Gulfstream had run her once on the dirt, which was a mistake, and she hated it. She had one race here where she was a little too keen and was right close to the lead, and it's really not her style. She likes to relax and then make a run. As far as training, she has been training very, very well. And like I said, I have always liked her. I mean, I thought that we would get a piece of it. No, I didn't really think she was going to step up and win. I mean, that would be a pretty major statement to say. But it was a pretty logical spot for her being here at Woodbine.
You know, it's funny about this, too, is, you know, this came ahead of the plate. And, you know, not that we didn't think that Josie, who was on with us earlier, not that we didn't think Josie Carroll, you know, had a good shot to win the plate. It wasn't with her second or third horse who ended up running 1-2 in there. It was with the filly for John Sakura. And, you know, you had already authored this upset. And really, The two of them blew those races apart. They won resoundingly.
Yes, I know they did. Yeah, she did run, you know, really, really good race, and she definitely stepped up, but she really won pretty easily.
Yeah. She won by widening lengths. Ended up the chart says 4, but it you know, if the race was a mile and 3/8, she would have won by the length of the stretch.
Yeah, it's exactly what she wants to do, is get the distance and split horses, and was brave enough to do it.
Hey, you talk about David Moran's involvement here, because I don't see where you've got much of a record of riding him very often.
I know. You know, with nobody being allowed to come to Woodbine, riders can't come because of our quarantine, we deal with just the riders that are here, and there's not that many of them. Obviously, being a long shot, in there, everybody said no. I mean, I kind of went through the regular people that had ridden her, and they just had other horses to ride. So I think David has been doing really, really well this year, and he's an excellent grass rider. So he came over and breezed her once so he could get to know her a little bit and watch replays of her races, and did a great job. I mean, I think he suited her very well. Now I'm happy with that decision.
I guess so. I mean, as you should be. I mean, he really kind of sat chilly, and he must have sensed that apparently, too, the middle portion of the race where the speed, where Another Time and Amalfi Coast, Cambier Park made not an early move, but, you know, kind of prompted things mid-race. And he made a very wise decision to not move too early.
Yes, he absolutely did, and he had also had a horse outside of him, and he wasn't letting him out anywhere. So he just did sit and wait until he could get through.
Wow.
And he said, really, she did it quite easily on her own.
That's the way it looked. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting for him, for Moran, I think his first graded stake win was in the Canadian, going back 8 years to Barefoot Lady, was his first graded stake for Richard Fahey. Wow. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he's won. You know, he's won his share. I mean, he's won, you know, steadily. He's looking for his first grade one, but he's been, you know, he's been a solid journeyman a long time. And it's funny because, you know, Josie had kind of a similar scenario. She had never really had any relationship with Fukumoto, and ended up putting him on Mighty Heart.
Yes, and. You know, both those guys are having a very good year. Really good. Everybody said it's because David, I believe his wife is having or just had another baby. And I think it's the ninth. It might be the eighth, but it could be the ninth. So he has to ride hard.
What is this, the 1930s? What is he doing? That's crazy.
Yeah, their own baseball team.
But I'm pumped. you and I can't talk without bringing up El Tormenta, of course, and the monumental win, of course, in the Woodbine Mile and Sampson Farm. Always, you know, the association with Sampson is. You know, any horseman would thrilled to train for Sampson and get the kind of horses that they produce.
It's been wonderful for me. They're just great people to train for, and they breed really good horses, and they're wonderful to train for.
And this one, it's funny, the dam, I didn't look the dam up, but the name does ring a bell, actually, Dance for the Cause.
Yes, I had no association with her, but she's a homebred, she's theirs.
Well, which is the case, so often. And this is actually only the second foal. There's actually a couple yet to come. She had a little bad period. She lost a baby in 2017, and then they reset her for 2019. She's got a distorted humor yearling, and she's got a street sense weanling, and Say the Word. I know Say the Word.
Yeah.
Right. Is the half brother.
And I have him here.
Yeah.
It's another horse that they have some trainers in the States and some here, and they sort of place them where they think they should go, and Say the Word came up here last year to try the Tapita and didn't really like it that much. And then they wanted some grass races. He wound up going to Fairgrounds. Neil Howard had him there.
Right.
And he's another one that needs a distance of ground, and it's hard to get. So after Fairgrounds, he came back up here, and I got to run him. But again, it was a bit too short a mile, a 16th. It's a one-turn turf course. Trying to get something longer for him, it didn't work out, and that's why he shipped to Saratoga to run. And, he ran well. He won there and just loved the distance. So he's back here now, and he's going to run in a stake this weekend.
Nice. Well, and, now it all comes together as I pull up, the rest of the female family. Ride for the Cause, this is all going back through Dance Through the Dawn and Dance Smartly, and this is a huge win for her then, Gail, to get her a big grade two like this.
It is. It really is. I've had her, they sent her here as a two-year-old, and she was a bit difficult to deal with. She has settled with age. But it was a huge win.
How about that? And, I don't know if you saw the fig, but career best 94 buyer, too.
Yeah, it's a big jump up.
Very much. And the thing is, when I had to go back and look yesterday morning when I was doing the figs and kind of doing an assessment, and looking at her on Thoroughgraph, actually, Gail, and that performance in the allowance race, when she went back to a mile and an eighth, she made a significant improvement on her fig in Thoroughgraph. She had gone from 8.5 had been her top going back to the Gulfstream stake, mm-hmm. but this was a 7.75, and it was a breakthrough, but it wasn't like a big jump breakthrough, and that very frequently augurs for even more improvement. So she was projectable to run better, and I'm anxious. We had a contest for National Handicapping Championship seat that culminated Saturday, and the winner, a guy by the name of Brett Allaire, he had both the plate winner, and he had her. And so I'm anxious. Yeah, I'm anxious to talk to Brett in the next day or so, and I'm very anxious to know why he went in her direction, what he liked about Ride for the Cause.
Yeah, I mean, in my eyes, and I train her, so it's a little bit prejudiced, but I didn't think she should be 20-something to one. I thought that was, I guess people were just betting a couple of horses there, and that's how it happens.
Well,
24 to 1, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, that you're right, because they actually had gravitated, obviously, to Chad and Cambier Park, which wasn't a bad lean. I mean, she went off at a tick under even money, and she ran a winning race, other than for you and Ride, just, you know, just absolutely right. Everything coming together, essentially.
Yeah, right. No.
Well, and I see, and I was also surprised when I was very surprised that Michael Dickinson opted to run Theodora at Kentucky Downs. I thought he'd come back in this spot.
I thought he would come back too, and I sort of had heard he was going to, but Kentucky Downs is they have a lot of money that they're running for. I don't know how much
yes,
more
they are.
It was than here, but it's huge money, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Which begs the question for you: what do you think? What you know? I know you've got. There's still plenty of stake program left at Woodbine. What's your thought about what's next for her?
Well, I sort of yet to really discuss it in depth, but you know, you do automatically think of the E.P. Taylor.
Right.
It's a distance that would be right up her alley. And she's doing really well. And if she continues to, that race is right here.
Yep.
So that's what I think would be the next step if all things carry on like they are now. It's been a bit of a funny year here because when people ship horses, they cannot ship people.
Right.
Because of our quarantine. And it probably most people have found somewhere to send the horse, but still, when you have a really good horse and you can't send a groom, you can't send anyone with it, they might be a little hesitant to come here. We've probably had less shippers come in here.
One more question, too. The Canadian stake was presented by the JRA, the Japan Racing Association. They usually have got a cute little gift or two that comes with their stakes. What did the JRA present you with?
They presented a trophy. If there was a gift certificate, I didn't get it.
they give ties. I know that they give, you know, they always show up with ties for everybody, and sometimes other, you know, there's all the JRA is big on like little gesture gifts. Maybe things are a little goofy with but I would ask the racing office, ask the stakes coordinator if there's anything in the office that came from JRA.
Anything that I'm missing?
Yes. Is there a little jewelry, a little trinket, maybe a nice kerchief or something?
I'm going to do that. Thank you.
Gail, absolutely thrilled for you and the Samsung team and for David Moran. A tremendous win for Ride for the Cause. Continued success. Always great to talk to you.
Thank you. You too.
Gail Cox, and of course, authoring the big upset last year with El Tormenta and in the mile. And here's another one. You got to look. A second and third time, it feels like, at Gail's horses in these big spots. Got plenty to do coming back tomorrow. Obviously, sales follow-up, and John Secura owes us a visit, so maybe we'll get to John. Mark Cassie, I think, tomorrow as well. Michael Ann Ewing tomorrow to visit. And all the other associated hijinks. Thanks to Marty McGee and Steve Anderson, Daily Racing Form, both today. Josie Carroll and Gail Cox from Woodbine. Brian DiDonato, TDN, helping us with the sales coverage. And Joe Orsino, Joe-O, off of Imprimis's terrific performance. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. How about some Canterbury in Indiana? Keep you busy. All right. And what else? How about a little, another option or two? The Flakes got Finger Lakes today. What else? Who am I forgetting? Oh, Assiniboia, right? They're wrapping up. They've got today the last card or tomorrow? Assiniboia is wrapping up. Delaware today too. Fort Erie, speaking of Canada. Grants Pass. Louisiana Downs, Mountaineer, Parks, Prairie Meadows, Presque Isle, and Thistledown. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.